Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 23rd of March 2014. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Phil from the West End Whingers, Gareth James, and Web Cowgirl.
We're now going to talk about I Can't Sing, the musical. This is a musical based on The X Factor, and has a book by Harry Hill, and music and lyrics by Steve Brown, and it's directed by Sean Foley, who also has Jeeves and Wooster on at the moment. Phil, can you tell me more about this and what you thought?
I had rather a strange experience with this because I went on Monday and, of course, there were rumours about the interval lasting 50 minutes because they have a problem loading the second act set. And nearly an hour into we were waiting, and then Sean Foley jumped on stage and told us that they couldn't go ahead, basically, because they had electrical problems. So I saw it by chance on Tuesday, where it went all the way through, and it was two completely different experiences. It's kind of a bit off the point, but what was quite interesting was the difference in the atmosphere. On Monday night, I think the upper circle was closed. There seemed to be nobody in it, and maybe a couple of people, and they could have been production people, and quite a lot of empty seats in the stalls. Tuesday night was it seemed packed to me, and the atmosphere in the audience was completely different, and it was actually completely different because Simon Cowell was there in person. And it's amazing the kind of rock star kind of adulation that he's getting from people. As he took his seat for the second act, there were loads of people standing and they were craning over the circle to get a glimpse of him, people taking photographs. And the second act actually was ready to go before the audience were, and they actually started while a lot of people still standing up and everything. So it was kind of a strange thing. Seeing the second act again, I did find some things in the second act funny the first time. Not enough. I am a big fan of Harry Hill. I love TV Burp. I like his surreal humour. And a lot of that is in the show. And I think that's where it's strongest. I'm being as positive as I can at the moment. I think the weaknesses for me was the songs, which I don't think are particularly memorable. There are some sort of gags in the songs, but I think not enough. It doesn't have that Book of Mormon kind of feel. The songs aren't as good and they're not funny enough. Having said that, when I did get to the second act on the second night, I found quite a lot of it very funny. And a lot of this was because of Nigel Harmon's Simon and, I can't remember her name now, Victoria, who played the...
Victoria Elliott?
Yes, that's right, sorry. Who played Geordie, which is a very thinly disguised Cheryl Cole. And I thought she was absolutely hilarious, and she provided the funniest moments for me. I also liked the guy, Charlie Baker, who played the hunchback. I thought he milked the humour quite brilliantly. But unfortunately, he then gets this terrible rap number, which I just thought they could cut that easily. But I suppose they can't, and I can't really say why. But we do need to see him do a number. There's a big sort of supermarket number where a cashier woman who's sort of styled a bit like Subo, played by Katie Seacombe, does a sort of an anthemic 70s number, which is performed on the conveyor belts of the tills, which almost worked but didn't quite for me. I don't know quite why. It never really hit the spot. And there's, I thought, a very messy number where Shanice, the girl who is the one who apparently can't sing, but of course she can sing brilliantly, she's played by Cynthia Erivo, I think that's how it's pronounced. She is quite a brilliant singer, although I think her part needs developing a bit to make her a bit more of an interesting character. I think the big problem for me is after Viva Forever, and even with Viva Forever, I felt it was too late. The sort of parodying X Factor is kind of too late. Peter Kay did it quite late on, but did it so brilliantly. And whilst there is quite a lot of good humour, I thought particularly in the second act, it's sort of too late for that. And I wonder who the audience for this is, because I think people who are fans of The X Factor probably aren't, on the whole, the kind of people who would pay to go to the theatre and not pay a lot of money either. So it's sort of too late, and it's been overdone. I think the whole sort of sending up TV talent shows has been just done to death. And that, for me, is the big problem.
What do you think about it, Gareth?
I think I'm more positive about it than Phil. And we were actually at the same performance, so we are judging, well, the same performance on the second time Phil went. So we are kind of judging the same thing. I woke up in the morning, though, to hear about the cancellation of the second half the night before, and I'd known a bit about the elongated intervals, but not that much. So I kind of was a bit nervous because my companion was coming down from the East Midlands and staying overnight to come and see this. So I was a bit nervous that it was not going to go ahead or indeed be curtailed, because it's clearly, you know, she's going to a lot of trouble to come. I think the show isn't ready. I think the first thing we have to say about it is the show isn't ready, which at this point in previews, more than 2 weeks in, it should be. But of course, they have cancelled previews and they've had other problems. And I think the reason for that is, frankly, that they don't have enough people who've ever staged a musical involved in this show. You know, Sean Foley's a great director of comedy, but he's never actually directed a musical, which is a very different beast altogether. Harry Hill's never written one, and the choreographer's done sort of hip-hop shows like Some Like It Hot, but never a West End musical. And the composer has only written one, really, and that was Spen, Spen, Spen. And I came to this the other way around, to Phil, really, and that I'm not really that keen on Harry Hill, but I actually did like the music to Spen, Spen, Spen a lot, and therefore the sort of starting point for me was more, I'm keen to see his music rather than to see Harry Hill's work. I think it does, by and large, work. I mean, it is probably a little too long and it lags a bit in parts. And I think there are, if they're brave, some judicious cuts to be made. And the cast did say at the Q&A afterwards, three of them came on. The cast did say at the Q&A afterwards is that they are having changes on a daily basis. They're having rewrites overnight and they're coming in at 9 o'clock in the morning. And every show they do is different. So they're still doing that. And that was 1 week before the press night. I think it could make it, actually. I think it could end up by next Wednesday of being a good show. I think it is very funny. I don't like Harry Hill, but actually his humour in this, I think, is very good. And I think the parodies are very good. And there's a kind of haphazard ramshackleness about it that I quite rather liked. So I think some of it's intentional and some of it isn't intentional. But somehow it kind of suited the anarchic spirit of Harry Hill, I suppose, really. And indeed of Sean Foley's work as well. So I think it could well make it. I do think that Simon Cowell in the house did give it a certain frisson, and I agree with Phil that having a full house also mattered. It's a very difficult theatre to fill the Palladium, and the last show famously didn't fill it for very long, the chorus line. But this is a different beast, and I think it's aiming for an audience that, you know, like the Book of Mormon and like the Commitments, which is a very different sort of audience to musicals. And it might find it. The other two certainly have. The Commitments, despite the reviews, is now extending till 2015, I think. And the Book of Mormon, of course, is a huge success, despite the fact they keep advertising it heavily. The comparison to the Book of Mormon is interesting, I think, because I think this isn't as slick as the Book of Mormon, but it's also not as cynical. And I kind of like that. I kind of like the fact that the parody wasn't really cutting. It was kind of fairly gentle, really. But it was still, you know, it was still sending the whole X Factor thing up. I mean, I think there's some great performances in it. I mean, Cynthia Erivo, who plays the contestant who can't sing, but of course can with bells on, is fabulous. I mean, a fabulous voice. And it's a great invention of a dog, which I won't say more about, except that it's played brilliantly by Simon Lipkin, who, you know, really is excellent and almost steals the show, frankly.
I do agree with you about Simon Lipkin. I thought he was very good. And there's some good, I don't want to spoil them, but there's some good gags referring to that. That's quite interesting about the rewriting. I mean, there's even a joke about their own technical problems in the show, which I assume will be dropped at some point if it runs long enough. So, yeah, you can see that they're adding to that. And there's that sort of self-referential in the sense that it's referring to the fact that the problems with I Can't Sing, which is quite funny. And in a way, more of that would be sort of almost breaking the fourth wall in a sense, would make it very funny. And these, you know, can't say anything about the end. I mean, there's some things about Simon Cowell which are quite interesting. I mean, there's a lot of religious things. I don't know if you noticed that, Gareth, but there's choir boys, angels, stained glass window, Simon performs miracles during the show, and various other things. And what I found interesting was the fact that there is this idea that he's sort of a messiah. And actually, if you'd been there on Tuesday night, as Gareth was, and seen what was going on, it was like the second coming going on in the auditorium. So there was a strange thing. I think Simon Cowell should go every night and they would have a massive hit on their hands.
No, I agree with that. I mean, it was extraordinary to sort of see him coming in and all these. I mean, I didn't know what was going on where I was sitting. But then,
well, I didn't at first, and he was only a couple of rows behind me. But it wasn't till there was somebody standing up taking photographs before the show began, And then at the interval, it was Bedlam. And he seemed to be enjoying it. And I think, I wonder if he'd been brought in after what happened the night before to give a huge boost to the show. And it certainly did.
It was fascinating because I kind of turned around, couldn't understand what was going on. There was a kind of bit of a white speck because there was a kind of white shirt that stood out in other people's clothes. And then people started saying, it's Simon, all around you. And then everybody's standing up and taking photos and turning around. And as you say, after the interval, I mean, they kind of sealed off a whole chunk of the mezzanine bar, I think it was, for his party. And people were standing at the bottom of the stairs waiting to get a glimpse of him. And it was life imitates art, really, because there is something messianic about the way they portray Simon. And there was something messianic about the way Simon was in the audience. So you could, if you didn't know otherwise, you could almost believe it was part of the show and it did happen every night. And as you say, if it did happen every night, it probably would give them a guaranteed surefire hit.
But yeah, I think it would be if they knew. I mean, maybe he could turn up at every preview, which will give the whole show a boost and probably help the cast. I'm sure it must have helped the cast and crew after the night before. I'm sure he probably went backstage afterwards and congratulated them. And they probably, I would imagine, with the work that they're having to do at the moment with changing, I do agree with you about changes. And but it's interesting that I didn't see any noticeable changes between the first act on Monday and Tuesday. And I think there were some things that rap number, I don't like rap, so that's my problem. But actually, I found the Shanice's audition, where they have the giant lips and the fly, that didn't work for me at all. I thought it was a bit of a mess.
Yeah, that wouldn't work for me either. I think that the judges are underwritten, to be honest. I mean, I think Louis and Geordie, as she's called, are underwritten parts. We don't see that much of them, I don't think. We see a bit more of Geordie than we see of Louis. Even though I think Nigel Harmon is good as Simon, he seemed very, very hesitant and tentative on Tuesday night. And I wonder whether it was because Simon was in the audience. But it also could be, of course, because he's got prosthetic teeth and high trousers.
Yeah, I put it down to the teeth, actually. Also, did you think, I mean, obviously it does send up Simon Cowell, and he's just called Simon in the show. It's interesting they kept his name, which is an apostle's name, whereas most of the other, although Louis is still Louis, Geordie's been changed, and Jedwood's have been changed to Altar Boys, another religious reference. Yeah. And I felt, you know, Louis is portrayed as a kind of a rather geriatric simpleton, which is quite harsh, and Geordie was kind of nice but dim. And although that, you know, Simon's portrayed as preening and everything like that, because he's sort of this messiah, which obviously he is, I didn't feel it was as cruel on him. And of course, Simon Cowell is one of the producers, or the producer, he's one of the producers of the show. I don't know if he's actually got money in it himself, but he's certainly backing it. And obviously it does show Simon Cowell to have a sense of humour, which I'm sure he does anyway. But I don't know. I think one of the problems is it's in the Palladium. If it'd been in a small theatre, and the Palladium is massive, even Dame Edna couldn't fill it. And obviously it is a huge show. I mean, the second act, particularly, because the first act, as you say, is kind of, it doesn't look like an expensive show in the first act. In the second act, it does. And I can see why they've had problems with the sets.
I'm told it's cost about £5 or £6 million a stage, which is pretty high even by musical standards, I have to say. That's about the same as The Wizard of Oz was to stage there at the Palladium a couple of years ago. And I gather that Psycho, his company, owns half the show, which means he has probably personally put in £2 or £3 million. But frankly, you know, to Simon Cowell, that is just pocket money, isn't it? So I think the lack of an experienced musicals producer may also be part of the issues here, because neither his production company nor their co-producer, I think, have ever produced a musical before. And I don't keep harping on about this, but, you know, musicals are risky things, and they're opening it in the biggest theatre in the West End, the highest profile stage in the country. They don't really have that many people who've done it before, and I think that shows, you know. I think that does show. But, they may yet pull it off. They may yet pull it off.
I think another problem they might have is it's very British. The humour is very British, and that's nothing wrong with that. But in terms of attracting foreign punters to see it, they're going to have a problem, because I think, one, I don't know that kind of humour translates that well. But also, because it is a send-up specifically of our X Factor, I don't think people will get that. I don't watch the X Factor. I actually can't stand the programme. But I did get, you know, the general gist of the gags, although there were some that probably went over my head, some references that I didn't get. Although I must actually say, I thought the Jedward Irish number in the second act, that came closest to having a sort of Book of Mormon feel to it, because it was just so utterly daft and actually rather enjoyable.
I think the big numbers generally were good, actually. I mean, I think the title song, I Can't Sing, and the other big numbers, I think were very good. There is a lot to like about this show, and I had a good night, you know. I mean, I wasn't expecting lots. I mean, I think you're right in saying that if you don't know the X Factor, you won't really get it. So I think that does shut out a lot of people, although there's still about 10 million people who watch the X Factor, or probably more historically, like me, have watched it. I don't watch it anymore. But, of course, the show is on in almost every other country, and even though they'll have different judges, I think they might get enough of it.
Yeah.
In the US, if they've seen the US X Factor, they will in any event have seen Simon. So that's
the they all know Simon Cowell, obviously. Yeah.
And of course, they show Cheryl for one program. And I suppose in other countries, I mean, they've had the X Factor in Australia and well, anywhere, you name it. So maybe it will attract that sort of audience. But I shall be very interested in seeing how the critics take it. Very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I assume they're going ahead with the opening night, which I think is on Wednesday, which between us seeing it and then, and I would imagine with a big show like that, normally they start letting the critics in. I would imagine they'd be going in on Monday and Tuesday, possibly even Saturday, yesterday. I don't, because they normally have 3 or 4 nights beforehand with a show of this scale. And that's not a big gap between when we saw it and getting it right for them.
No, particularly with rewrites. I mean, by then, I mean, you certainly wouldn't be inviting critics in when you're still having rewrites. So unless they've stopped that since Wednesday morning.
But I'd be interested to know when they actually fix it, because it's not a big amount of time.
Yeah, yeah. But there we are. Let's find out. I mean, as I said, I didn't have big expectations, but I actually thought it was good fun, and I enjoyed it. My companion actually enjoyed it very much.
Well, and my companion the second night left at the interval.
Yes.
I just said it was dire, and
we should say any more about that, should we?
Yeah, the first night I saw it, or saw half of it, I was accosted at the interval stroke end of the show by a big issue seller who just came up to me and said, "It's crap, isn't it? I saw it on Friday. I took my wife for her birthday." Only laughed once, and that was in the second act. That's quite an interesting insight into the life of a big issue seller. I wonder if he paid for the ticket. I assume he didn't. But
I think if I'd had cancelled or curtailed performances or long intervals, I'd have a different perspective on it. But I was lucky enough, I think, to be at a performance that went by and large to plan, that had an extra free song because it had Cowell in the house. There was a full house, so it had atmosphere. So I think in a way I kind of I probably had a good experience. And I certainly don't regret going to it. Whether I'd ever go to it again, I don't know, really.
Yeah, I'm not sorry I saw it. I have to say that. But I did find it a struggle to watch the first act again. It exposed its flaws to me. And I thought some changes might be made in this. But perhaps they were so busy making sure they could actually get it all the way through, putting changes in when they'd had such problems with the sets. And according to Baz, apparently, they've done something with the first act sets to reduce the size of them, to make the loading of the Act 2 sets more possible.
I mean, I didn't think the sets looked that complicated to me. I mean, you know, in comparison to something like Lord of the Rings, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I mean, they were gaudy and brash as they probably should be for the X Factor, but I mean, as Devlin sets were good, except I didn't like the mouth, which is also on the poster. But apart from that, I thought.
I don't actually like the poster. I think that's. It's not a very attractive image.
But it's very Harry Hill, I think. That's the poster. It's very Harry Hill, the poster.
But it reminds me of Terry Gilliam and the Rocky Horror Picture Show. It sort of doesn't feel that original.
All Star Productions at the Old Red Lion in Walthamstow recently put on It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman, a musical by Charles Stross with lyrics by Lee Adams and a book by David Newman and Robert Benton. A Superman musical. Really? Web Cowgirl, tell me more about this.
So Superman, the musical, although actually called It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman, just closed at the Old Rose and Crown Theatre up in Walthamstow. And I can't tell you how pleased I was that I actually made the trek up there to go see this show. On the face, it sounds very suspicious, perhaps sort of a follow-up to the horror that has been Spider-Man the Musical, Spider-Man the theater production, and indeed all of the superhero movies that have gone on. Like, here's another trend. But as it turns out, this was actually written in the 60s by the team responsible for Bye Bye Birdie and Annie. So Superman actually comes from the Silver Age of American musicals, and the quality of the songwriting in it, frankly, has nothing to apologize for. They are really good. And the story itself is quite funny and not at all what I was expecting. But the thing that really mattered about this as a production was the extraordinarily ironic camp sensibilities that they brought to the show. Because these days, having a superhero whose job basically is running around doing good and being just a tiny bit smug about the whole thing is really hard to take seriously. And this production completely didn't bother to be serious about it. They were having fun. So you get a plot in which Superman is copping off with one of the other secretaries while Lois Lane is being seduced by a not entirely mad scientist. And you have a pack of Chinese acrobats who were cringeworthy in their possible racist role in this play, because back in the 60s, they didn't have a sense of irony about that. It's just how things were. And somehow the play managed to incorporate this, which would have been difficult to cut, without making it terrible. They cross-cast the Chinese acrobats racially, so they were actually Caucasian troupe. And as the final one, because they do turn out to be villains in a way, is arrested, he says that, you know, he's at Cornell, which to me kind of makes it clear that Chinese people in America, even during the 60s, were not, I guess, communist dupes. You'd expect that this would have been a standard plot about Superman has to save Metropolis from an atomic bomb. And indeed, at some point, he does have to catch a missile launched from a submarine. But in fact, the real problem that Superman has to face is being psychoanalyzed, which was just so appropriate for a 1960s play. How are you going to bring down Superman? We're going to make him realize that all of his issues originate from his relationship with his mother and his father. There's also a really, really strong cast with the sort of madman men sensibilities of the way that things were dressed and the verve and pizzazz of the whole production. It was really fantastic. I thought some of the standouts, well, Superman had a very, very good singing voice, but cracked me up a little bit with his pot belly. However, he had incredible eyebrow control, and the way that he'd stare at the audience and lift his eyebrow as if to say, we're all in on this joke together, was nothing short of hysterical. Lois, who was Michelle LaFortune, and if I didn't say it, Craig Barry of Superman, was running around in a miniskirt the whole time and looking every bit the 1960s female reporter in the big city. It was just fabulous. Sydney, the secretary at the Daily Planet, played by Sarah Kennedy, actually had two really big numbers, which was quite a surprise to me, because I thought she was just going to be kind of a throwaway character who's, you know, in love with another reporter and constantly being turned down. But she actually had a fantastic number, I believe it was You Really Love You, that apparently is taken off as a sort of cabaret night song. Overall, I really have to say, as far as fringe productions and musicals go, this was really just the top of the crop. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they do next time, because they seem to be doing a very, very good job of picking high-quality musicals and reviving them in a cost-effective and audience-pleasing way.
So what did you think about Superman, Gareth?
Well, I also loved it. I left it till the last night purely because of availability. So I don't know whether there was a particularly great atmosphere in the theatre last night, but it was packed and everybody was having a ball, really. It's amazing this show has not been here before, because it's really got some really nice songs in it, and it's just a fun show. And here we are 48 years on from the Broadway opening. We're getting it in a room above a pub in Walthamstow, and I find that simply extraordinary, because I actually think it's in its own terms, it's just a great fun show. And I saw two other musical comedies within the same kind of week. One we've talked about, I Can't Sing, and also Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. And I have to say, you know, it was as much fun as both of those, but for about a fifth of the price and a shoestring budget. But they do so well with a shoestring budget, with a sort of set of panels which can change the locations and some good costumes. And the director doubles up as the set designer and the choreographer doubles up as the costume designer. It's just great fun. I love the performances. I mean, the quality of singing in this cast was very, very high. Superman himself, Craig Berry, has got a great booming baritone voice. And when you add that to a sort of earnest look and a kiss curl, I mean, he was just very, very good. And Lois, Michelle LaFortune, is a very good Lois. There's a superb performance from someone that Webb Cowgirls just talked about, from Sarah Kennedy as Sydney, who's a woman who works at the Daily Planet, who is just great. And I quite liked, albeit politically incorrect, but I quite liked the five lings, the five acrobatic lings. I thought that was a great invention. So I think this is, you know, the old Rosencrantz Theatre punching way above its weight again and becoming an indispensable venue for musical theatre with a, you know, a UK premiere here. And I really hope they do what they did before, which is transfer it down to the Landor, because I think it needs to be seen for a longer run in another space. I think there is a bit of a deterrent for some people in going up to Walthamstow. I don't know why. It's just up the Victoria Line and 7 or 8 minutes from the tube station. But I do think it's off a lot of people's radar, which I think is a bit of a shame, because I think it needs a longer run, needs to be seen by more people. So it'd be lovely if it found another home for another run. I certainly would go again. I enjoyed it very much indeed, and I think Randy Smartnick, who directed and set designed it, and Kate McPhee, who choreographed and costume designed it, have done a terrific job. It's a real United Nations up there in Walthamstow, because we've got people from Canada and the US and Australia and all sorts of places involved in this show. A treat. Sadly over, but let's hope we see it again.
Yeah, it has to be said, by the reaction to these all-star productions over the last couple of years, I mean, you really do begin to think that they need, they need to get it seen by more than sort of 50 or so people a time, don't you?
And not only that, for some reason the press doesn't go up there. I mean, there have been next to no reviews of this show. Not even the stage has had a review of this show. I don't think they've had a review in Time Out. None of the nationals have been there, which is just such a shame, because they ought to be going out there, and shame on them for not going out there, because this is one of a very small number of fringe musical theatre venues that we just have to be thankful that we've got. So national press, Time Out, get out there to Walthamstow. Too late now, but next time.
We're now going to talk about Space 2014, which is Theatre Delicatessen's latest, I think they call it a theatre souk, which is a group of different companies and different performers where you negotiate the price and go to little tidbits of plays. Gareth, tell me more about this.
Yes, I mean, Theatre Delicatessen, which currently occupies an unused office block in Marylebone, is a kind of laboratory, really, and theatre companies come in and research things and try things out. And then once a year, they have this idea of what they call the theatre souk, which then gets 5 or 6 nights in front of an audience. And what they do is they choose, I think this time, 16 companies who each put on a little show of around 50 minutes long in a different space over 2 floors of this building. And then there's a sort of bar on the main floor. About a quarter of the shows are one-on-ones, and the rest of them, you know, the audience could be anything from 5 up to about 20, 25, I guess. And you pay admission to the space, and then you choose what you're given, a kind of list of what's on and the names of the companies, and then it's up to you what you do with it beyond that. You can go to any of the shows. Normally there is a fee, an extra fee, but it's normally £1 to go and see something. Or alternatively, the fee can be in the form of a bet, or can be in the form of payment for a change of outcome, as it was in one show. So there's an extra sum of money involved, but only, you know, a minimal amount of money. And when you add that together with the entrance fee, we're not talking, you know, we're not talking bank breaking stuff here. I got to 5 of the 16 shows, and I enjoyed all 5 of the 16 shows that I went to. I went to a thing called the Cake Shop, where literally 8 of us were sitting in a little cake shop being served vast quantities of sweet things. I was absolutely full when I left there. But after a while, we get a kind of more serious message about the body that comes through. I thought that was very well done. And then there's a very surreal thing, which is called a sandwich shop, where you didn't get fed. They put an awful lot of people into this room to see two girls perform something quite bizarre and surreal with about 4 people in a band and a newsreader. I mean, I thought it was fun, but it wasn't as good as the previous one for me. My favourite one was called On the Ropes, and it has a subtitle which I won't use because it's got 4-letter words in. And there's a boxing ring, and then it's basically relationships are played out in the boxing rings. So it could be a couple, it could be a prison guard and a prison officer, it could be whatever, it could be a prostitute with a client. I mean, and these relationships are played out, but what happens to the relationships down to the audience? So you pay £1 to change the outcome, and then you've got a list around the wall of the sort of outcomes you can choose, or indeed you can choose an outcome which isn't listed. And I thought that was very, very well done. I popped in there twice. There's a clever idea that didn't work when I went to it, largely because it requires good audience participation, and our participation wasn't particularly good. And it was a kind of future fertility clinic in a sort of society where natural births are illegal, and you go in, your DNA is approved, and you go in, and then people are selected for an embryo from amongst the participants by being asked questions by the presenters and indeed some of the audience. And the final thing I went to was a snail race, where we were told a bit about the history of snail racing. So it was a bit of again, a bit surreal, but quite fun, except the snails never went anywhere. They just kind of went on top of each other and round in circles. But this was actually real snails, and people had put on real money, and people actually won real money. And at that point, which was about 2.5 hours after we went in, so I'd only seen 5 things, that 50 minutes, about 2.5 hours, but they evacuated the building. So that was the end of that, really. And I particularly avoided the one-on-ones, because I just wasn't in the mood for that, really. The thing I'd say about it is that it's not easy to navigate. I think getting the list just before you come in, you're just kind of lost, really. And it was a while before I got into my stride. And sort of, I mean, it must have been 30, 40 minutes before I went into the cake shop. And then I went to a couple of other things which were full, which I understand all of that. But I think I'd have had a better experience, and I'd have seen more, if they'd published a list on the website and I'd sort of decided what I was going to do, and then turned up with the other problem is turn up with enough pound coins, because you sometimes had to find change and go to the bar to buy a drink to get some change. So I felt, from a sort of logistical point of view, I thought it could have been done better in by giving people advance notice of the shows, and by making it easier to sort of get hold of the change, and perhaps even by booking slots rather than just turning up, and when it's full, it's full. So from that point of view, it was a little bit dissatisfying. But I think the concept's great. It's a kind of, you know, it is experimental. You just have to accept it will be hit or miss. But it's a sort of breath of fresh air, really, theatrically. And I was glad I went.
You went through this as well, didn't you, Webcow Girl?
I have to say, my experience at Theatre Souk was ultimately not a positive one. I did see 2 works that I thought were interesting, one of which was actually beautiful and quite well done. But because of the disorganization of the event, I left with a negative taste in my mouth. The schedule wasn't provided beforehand, and almost no information was provided about what actually was going to be happening. In fact, I didn't even realize there was a schedule on which things were going to be happening. But it hardly mattered, because even at the very beginning, there was a half-hour wait to get in because the front door wasn't appropriately staffed. When she did make it inside, there was a big televised schedule showing you what was going on, but it didn't say what the end times were for any of the shows. So you didn't know if you started a particular show, if you were actually going to be able to leave it in time to make it to some other thing that you were interested in. So I wound up spending probably 90 minutes just wandering around trying to get into a show. Some of them were starting late. They were overrunning. And there was also different ways of handling who's actually going to get into the show. So on two different occasions, I wasn't standing in the right place to make it into a show. On one of the occasions, they appeared to have been taking a wait list, which I didn't know about. So I stood around and waited for 15 minutes for them to let people in, and then was told that it had already been fully booked. And I was really tearing my hair out. The element that I thought was going to be actually troublesome was the whole money exchange, because it says that you're supposed to haggle with people to see shows. Well, I didn't really get to do a whole lot of haggling because I just kept being told again and again that it was too late. I'd missed out. It was sold out. The door slammed in my face as it was already closed. So the very few times where I did actually do an exchange for it, it turns out most people were expecting maybe 50p a pound, really not very much money. When I did pop an airplane bottle of Chivas into the cup that teacher was passing around in the class of 2014. I was told that I was going to be teacher's pet and moved up to the front of the class, and I actually really enjoyed it quite a bit. As it turns out, the teacher's pet incident for the class of 2014, that was the best of all of the shows that I went to. The idea was that you were a bunch of kids. You were one of a bunch of kids who had been sent in for detention, and you were given the rules and forced to copy things down for a lesson and to address the teacher as Miss or get in trouble. And I really wasn't sure how this was going. The actress who performed this, Eleanor Massey, popped outside at one point saying that she needed to get a glass of water and gave us a little bit of a tip by saying, "And don't you dare open up your desks." So when we did open up our desks, we kind of had a little treasure trove of candy and squirt guns and marbles, and I had a little thing inside saying, "Draw teacher's tits and pass them around to everybody else." And when we came back in, she told us all, we actually did a good job of closing the desk before she walked in. She told us all off for misbehaving, but then transitioned into the tale of someone else who had had troubles with her teacher and had gotten into trouble and had somehow managed to escape it all. And for the bit where she was talking about this person escaping it, she opened up a desk in the middle of the class, and the inside was filled with all of these fairy lights. And it was actually a really magical moment. And she then took off the clunky sweater that she was wearing and had on a gold leotard. And she'd promised that she'd make us all a star at the beginning of the session, which seemed like a bit of a threat. But in fact, I did walk out of it feeling very lighthearted and somewhat starlike. Unfortunately, overall, I thought that the evening was a mess, and I thought it compared poorly with the Battersea Arts Festival, or the Battersea Arts Center's one-on-one festival, in which you picked the shows that you wanted to see beforehand, which means that you had had the time to look through them and think about them and know what was coming up. And they actually had them running to a schedule. And as you walked in, you were presented with your schedule of things. I realized this was a lot more organization required than what was done for Theater Delicatessen, but it led to a much better audience experience. And perhaps some of the things improved afterwards. But frankly, I saw 4 things in 3 hours, and I consider it to be a bit of a waste of time.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page in Facebook. On the web, we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.